This is Tim Albright with the AV Spotlight, where we look at the technology managers, the folks that are on the front lines of AV and technology in the industry. With me today is Erin Mayer Moran from Johns Hopkins University. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. So one of the things that we start with here is just kind of get a sense of where you are. Your official title is Multimedia Services Manager. I always find it interesting what different universities and actually different companies call the AV folks, and even the IT folks in their organizations. But from your standpoint and kind of where you live, you know, explain to folks, you know, what it is that your title and kind of, you know, where you live in the Johns Hopkins universe.
Yeah, I always find that my title, Multimedia Services Manager, is very misleading. I think most people think of multimedia services as production and those sort of things. But that is not really what my team does. We sort of got shoehorned into the cookie cutter of titles for my department. So we actually, we support, install, maintain all of the fun things that have to do with general pool classrooms on the Homewood campus. And we also do event support. So any of the indoor events that happen on the Homewood campus, we tend to have a hand in.
All right. Really quickly, because you said something there that harkens me back to my technology manager days, shoehorned in kind of that. So walk somebody through it if they haven't lived through that, where at one time I'm certain that department either was separate, right, or there was an official AV department or AV staff. What did that process look like? Was it several meetings, or was it someday, you know, one day you woke up and got a memo that said, oh, by the way, you're now inside the IT department?
Well, when I first started at Johns Hopkins, my department fell under the central IT umbrella, which covered the hospital and the university. And then after a while, they decided that the classroom technology and the AV group, which was under facilities, had a lot to do with each other. So they put the AV department in with my group. And then years down the road, they realized that our team was very underfunded where it sat, and it was just not getting the attention that it needed. We were really just kind of putting bubble gum and band-aids on everything, and suddenly they're like, why isn't the classroom technology amazing? We are the Johns Hopkins University. And we were like, we don't get the right attention where we fall. So then there were many meetings that happened, and they decided that some of our team would go with the university like student support system. So the ones who did the computer labs and things like that, they went with one group. And then my team, which was mostly the event support and classrooms, went to, we fall under the Krieger IT department, which is under one of the schools that we support. But even though we're under one school, we support any of the schools that teach on the Homewood campus.
So you just, you know, there's an entire nation, entire world of technology managers who feel seen by you because they have lived that, right? There's a reason that your technology isn't amazing, because you gave them $100 a year, right, to refresh, you know, 300 classrooms. So it's certainly. One of the most interesting things that you will find, and one of the most common questions in this industry, is how did you get involved in AV? Because everybody's, as many people as there are stories. So how did you get into this crazy world of audiovisual?
I feel like I've been in it forever at this point. I actually got into the AV industry my freshman year of college. that I needed a work study job, basically. And the AV department seemed like the most flexible place to find a job. So I walked up to their stand at the job fair and was like, so what is this, you know, situation? And being a girl and being interested in AV, they were just like, whatever you want to do, you can come on up, come on over. And I was like, okay, this is great. And it was kind of the perfect fit for me.
So take me through, you know, freshman year of college, you know, all the way through how you got then ended up at Johns Hopkins.
Well, after I graduated from college, I switched my major at one point, ended up with an art degree, and really did not find a full-time benefits-paying position in the art world, because those jobs are far and few between, as I came to realize. And I didn't really have anything lined up. So the supervisor that I had worked under at the university, she was changing positions. And so they needed somebody to fill in as the supervisor for, you know, for until they can hire someone full time. And as that process went along, they just were not finding candidates that they really liked. So they were like, why don't you just apply and just, you know, do this for a little bit longer while you find something else. And 5 years later, I was still there. But that was the point where I was like, okay, I need to move on. But higher ed AV was what I wanted to stay in. And I happened to have a former student employee from my school that had come to work at Johns Hopkins. And he was like, there's the perfect job for you down here. What do you think of Baltimore? So I was like, sure, why not? At the time I was single and figured Baltimore seemed like as good a place as any to be. And how could I turn down an opportunity at the Johns Hopkins University?
Well, here's the thing. You say that is true, though. I mean, there are a handful of colleges and universities in the country, in the world, really, that you can say without explaining who or what they are, right? Johns Hopkins is one of those. And there is something to be said there, right? All apologies to our buddy, Joe Way in USC. Yes, certainly USC is there, and Notre Dame, Notre Dame is there, and Oxford. But Johns Hopkins is certainly, you know, in that realm as well. Absolutely. So this question is either for your current role or, you know, something else. But what's one of the biggest, not failures, but lessons you learn, right, through a misstep or something that you've had throughout your career?
I would have to say that my biggest fail was allowing myself to stagnate and not push harder to be recognized and compensated for all that I was doing, and also for not pushing my department to be better. My department moved to where we are now. I felt like a lot of what I was saying was falling on deaf ears, and the classroom technology really suffered for it. So I feel like, you know, had I pushed sooner or more, maybe, you know, we would have gotten where we are now a lot sooner. We're not perfect now, but yeah, we're definitely heading in the right direction.
Let me slightly challenge you a little bit on that, because the way you described it, and you correct me where I'm wrong on this part. You described it as the folks, you know, the higher ups, the academic and the leadership came to you guys and said, why isn't our technology great? Do you think sometimes they need to feel that pain to get something done, because sometimes, you know, because sometimes if it's you pushing, right, then it's just you pushing, right? But if they're the ones who finally feel that pain, or they get the epiphany or whatever, you know, but once the president of the college, right, once the head of academics feels that pain and understands what you've been saying, then things get done. Is that feel accurate to you?
Oh, absolutely. It's the old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah.
So I feel like it wasn't until we hit a point where a lot of faculty were like, this is unacceptable, that we finally were like, oh, okay, they do need better funding, because all of these things that they keep wanting to do, they can't do with a shoestring budget.
And VCRs, you know.
Yeah. Get blank 12 all the time.
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm not kidding. My daughter, who is she's in high school. They were watching a movie this past week, and she made a comment about, you know, having the tape and the VCR, and I'm like, it's 2021.
Right.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's a whole nother side story.
I mean, that was a big thing. Like, we had to really push especially when the analog sunset came and went and seemed to come around again, almost, that we had to push a lot of people to go, you know, to digitize their content. And luckily we had at Hopkins, we had a team of people that were helping to do that. Yeah. But because otherwise it would never happen. So I can imagine that at primary schools and stuff, and that it'd be difficult to make that switch.
Absolutely. Right. Because you've got, you know, whatever, you know, the however many thousands more, you know, primary and secondary compared to universities. So talk for a second to the integrators or to the manufacturers from your perspective, and even from your faculty's perspective. What do you wish that they knew or they understood that you don't feel sometimes they do?
That is a good one. I would have to say that I wish they knew that becoming an end user is a very broad term, and we appreciate that when they take the time to recognize what type of end user we are and what skill level we're working at, especially when it comes to customer support. Nothing is worse than having to call and you have this really high end support question, but you have to start down here and they ask you, you know, did you turn it off and on? Is it plugged in? And we're like, yes. We've been through that and then some. Can we jump up a couple more steps and get straight to like the engineering support? Because that's where we're at right now. And there are a few manufacturers, I think, that are getting better at recognizing that there are tiers within the end user community. But it would be nice if there were more of them.
Is it something where, and I'm spitballing here because I have no control for manufacturers in any way, shape, or form, but is it something as simple as you know what, Aaron, you've taken this class, or you've got folks that on your campus that have taken this class and this class and this class. Here's a super secret number that you can call, right? That you can call to jump the line to get to level two, to get to level three, right? Is it something as simple as that?
Absolutely. It could be, yes, because especially since a lot of manufacturers are offering online training or even in-person training, where a lot of my staff has taken many classes between that and also have AVIXA certifications. So they, you know, they have pretty good knowledge. So it would be nice if there was maybe that second separate phone line to be able to call.
Yeah, absolutely. If you had a special magic AV wand and you could wield it, what would you make happen?
Oh, If I had a magic AV wand, I'd like to create a classroom system that could do anything that any instructor would want it to do when they walked up to it. They could just press a button and it would magically do all of the things that that they need to do. Because it's difficult to prepare classrooms for all of the different scenarios that instructors want to do. So being able to just make a box that could do that, that'd be wonderful.
Aaron, thank you so much. That right there was worth the entire interview. So, thank you so much. For us, you can go by our website, avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv, and find more of these AV spotlights where we highlight the technology managers and the folks that are working the front lines of AV. So all that and more at avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv.